Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello and welcome to another hour of Tech Talk. It is me, Stephen Scott, back with you here once again. I don't know why I'm laughing at that. It must be because I've spent the last, what would appear to be 29 hours, driving my truck in Euro Truck Simulator. I really must take a break from that. Robin Christofferson is with me here from AbilityNet. Hello to you, Robin.
Hey, Stephen. How many times have you crashed?
Oof, wow. Well, you see, in the game, right, you can crash, and every time you crash, you got to get your truck fixed, and it's cost me £500,000 to fix my truck. And that's no joke. That's over the last 9 crashes. They were all totals. I've got to say, I do things, and when I do something, I make sure I do it well. So when I crash my truck in Euro Truck Simulator, I do it well.
Wow, and you probably take out all the other vans in your convoy as well.
But the good thing about that is I don't feel bad about it because I don't know I've done it. That's the thing, you see. That's the joy of being a visually impaired trucker inside this game. You don't have to worry about that because you have no idea what you've crashed into. So you don't have any guilt. It's great. I highly recommend it. Andy Wynn's also with us. Emails Andy's here.
Hello. I can confirm I've just been watching you for the last half an hour driving your truck around.
Yeah, we're actually late to getting this show started because I was trying to find a place to park. It is ridiculous. Yeah.
The last thing I saw was you crashing into somebody else's lorry and them disappearing over a bridge.
That didn't go well for them.
No.
I've sent a card. It's fine. Tim.
Great Twitch content.
Wouldn't it be great? No Tim this week. Tim is poorly. Sorry, Tim. Hope you're well or get well soon. Hope you're well. I hope you're well. But you're not well. That's why you're not here. I don't sound so aggressive saying that, and I don't mean it to sound that way. But in his place, Tim, come back soon, will you? We've got Sean Preece with us. Hello, Sean.
Hello. What have I let myself in for? I don't know what's going on. You're shouting at poorly Tim and, just a danger on the virtual roads.
Well, yes, exactly. Like I tell you, it was more dangerous. Your microphone, which has got the worst, it must be the worst microphone I've ever heard. Your volume is up and down.
Well, I feel like sometimes I need to shout to get myself heard on here, and sometimes I feel like you need a little quiet word in your ear.
Well,
so I go up and down.
Let's just stick to the quiet word in the ear for now.
Sorry.
That would be nice. Anyway, look, lots to talk about on the show this week. We're going to be talking about the WeWalk Smart Cane. We have an interview with the company who created it to learn more about it. Ellie Marsh joins us with that conversation a bit later. Also, we are going to be hearing from Polina Kohorev today. She is talking to Ricky West, the developer and creator of Ricky's Tech Talk. Wonder where we got that name from, eh? Yeah, stick a name in front of it. Well, do you know what? This is Tech Talk. There you go. Maybe workshop that one. But Ricky's Tech Talk is a YouTube channel. Well worth checking out, actually. So we're going to tell you all about it, and we'll hear from Ricky a bit later. We're going to get into the news as well. Big story this week that everybody is talking about, and that is the news that Apple are going to be scanning iPhone images for sexual abuse content. A very thorny topic, of course, but it's creating a lot of interesting debate online. I want to get you guys your takes on this. Also, big news from Google, announcing their own processor they're bringing to the Pixel 6 and the Pixel 6 Pro. First time I think we've ever heard of a Pro version of the Pixel. So we're going to hear about that. That comes from a website called androidpolice.com, which is a brilliant website name. I was really hoping Tim was going to be here because I had a story that I think would really appeal to him. He's a huge fan of the Amazon Fire TV Cube, and it now supports Zoom calls, which is kind of cool. You get Zoom on the Fire TV Cube. Why just the Fire TV Cube, though? I wonder about that. Well, we'll hopefully have the answer for you on the show this week. But we are going to kick things off where we often end the show. Email. We're going to start with this.
We get your email every day.
Yeah, your emails.
Here's your mail today.
Bing bong, bing bong, bing bong, bing bong. Emails, 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 emails. Yeah, it's not easy to do that over Zoom, is it? Yeah, it just always ends out of sync. It just sounds like a bunch of drunk people at a party attempting to sing Forever in Blue Jeans. Right, Andy, what's in the email inbox this week?
Right, we're going to start off with a handful of Lady A questions. So brace yourselves.
Stephen, of course, we're talking here about the R&B Talking Book skill that was launched.
No, just general Lady A questions. We will get to the other ones, I'm sure, later on.
Okay. But
these are just general ones so far. So, dear Stephen, Robin, Tim, and amazing emails, Andy. Oh, I like it already.
Hang on. Is there some editing going on in these emails?
No, I checked. That's a straight copy and paste, I promise you.
And an independent adjudicator for that one.
I'm loved, apparently. Hope you're all doing well. Glad to hear that you're back at full fitness, Stephen.
I'm not entirely sure about full fitness, but yeah,
or even fitness,
or even I don't know.
I
must admit, so I'm up till 3 o'clock last night on this game, this Euro Truck Simulator. I mean, it is utterly. If I sound tired today, that's why. I really need to not be playing this game. Although I am trying to get Andy into it, so I can, you know, annoy him whilst doing it. But yeah,
ruin my life as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Do go on.
So my question is this. I have two Echo Dots third gen in my living room and in my bedroom. I currently use my bedroom Echo Dot for my alarm in the morning, as my alarm, as well as listening to all my audio, my Audible books at night. I have a routine set up in the Lady A app to slowly turn on my smart lights in the morning and in the evening, as I'm light sensitive. I do rent, so I'm somewhat limited in what I can and cannot do. But what else can I do to make the most of my echoes, as I feel I'm not using them to their full capabilities? Thanks. That's from Alex.
Okay. That's an interesting one. Well, you know, we maybe should go to somebody who knows something about echoes and, you know, has actually, you know, spent some time doing a podcast about them. He's mentioned it only about 5,000 times on this program. Robin, tell us about the echo. What can we do with
it? As happenstance would have it, we've got two experts on today. Sean and I co-host...
Let's just say that word expert is doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Who?
We have a weekly show all about the Echo, and I would definitely recommend that you have a listen to that one. It's called The Echo Show, and that's a lot of fun. Every week, we cover a veritable bunch of skills and built-in features.
Smorgasbord.
Yeah, that's really good. It's fun, isn't it, Sean?
Yes.
He has to say that. And and we also, obviously, there is the Dot to Dot podcast, which is a daily one as well.
Right, enough of the plugs. Get on with it. What can this guy do with his
echo? We're up to episode 1650-something, so, you know, where do I start?
Games, at number one.
productivity skills, reminders, obviously, you know, finding out information and stuff like that. None of those he's mentioned, I don't think. So, yeah, there's loads of stuff that you can do day to day. You know, the weather, keeping in contact with people. Yeah, loads of different things. I don't know where to start. If you just search for the A-Lady, A-L-E-X-A, and Amazon, in whichever country you're in, you will get information from their own website about things that you can do. Go into the app. There is a section about things to do, so you could have a look in there as well. Or you could just ask the A-Lady, what can you do? And she'll surface an awful lot of things as well. You can also say things like, A-Lady, what are your top productivity skills this week? What are your top games? What are your most popular skills? That sort of thing. So you can get her to tell you a lot as well.
Yeah, and apologies, Alex, if you're we don't know if you're male or female, because we don't have knowledge of that from your name. But what I will say is, I think that you're using it actually already for quite a lot. I mean, there's lots of things you're doing with it already. I mean, the whole thing about listening to Audible books, of course, now you can listen to R&IB talking books, setting up routines. I mean, even I haven't gone that far. I mean, I've set up a lot of the smart stuff. I set up a weird routine, clearly by accident, because every so often my living room lights will just come on and then go off by themselves, and I haven't quite figured out why or how, because it's never at the same time. It always seems to be at different points. So I clearly must have set up some kind of sunset setting on it or something. I don't know what I've done.
Well done.
But yeah, they do come on, they do go off. And what I love, it, I love this, right? Sometimes I'll come upstairs at night and for whatever reason, I maybe need to go back downstairs to get something, chocolate. And when I go downstairs to get chocolate, the lights are all back on again. They just seem to turn themselves back on and off. So, you know, Alex, I think you're way ahead of the game here. Way ahead, more than I am, for sure. But, I mean, there's lots of things you can do. And that's the thing. It's such a... I will say this. I think that compared to the Google Home, this is so much easier because you've got that skill store. You can go through and look at what's available. And, you know, like Robin says, and I, we joke around, but actually, Dot to Dot is a brilliant resource. Go listen to that. And, you know, just go through the list. If you don't want to listen to Robin all day, we get that. You know, just look through the list and see all the different ones and listen to the ones you're interested in. And you might find some interesting stuff you can do. So good luck with that, Alex.
Play them on the Echo. Just say, "Hey, lady, play the Dot to Dot podcast or play the Echo show." And you... going to get Sean's dulcet tones in your ears, plus lots of useful tips and skills.
I love that he's bringing you into this to sort of almost make it okay that he's just plugging his show the whole way through this.
No, it's fine. That's fine. I love it. I always think of the smart speaker mainly as an accessible audio player. You know, it's great for listening to the radio, your podcasts, your audio books. It's fantastic. So anything above that, it particularly comes in to its own when we talk about the smart home. Once you add smart plugs, smart lights, then you start building routines for when you walk in a room with a motion sensor, it turns on, or you can turn all your equipment off, like your TV and everything, actually off at the mains. That's when it comes into its own. But I wouldn't worry about you're not using it enough. You just use it when you need to. It's fine.
One of the routines that I played with was some of them come up. You know, sometimes you get into the app, it'll actually bring up little routines and it'll say, "Hey, do you want it to do this?" One was turn all lights off at midnight. Again, that's one I've been actually needing to use because my lights just turn themselves all back on again. So, you know, it's really handy. I can make sure that every light in the house is off by 1 a.m. and then I don't have to worry about lights being on somewhere in the house. And, you know, like you're talking about all these different ways you can utilize it with smart technology. There's so many things you can do. I'll tell you one piece of kit that I'm quite intrigued to buy. I haven't bought it yet. And weirdly, it's one of the cheapest things I could buy, which means that for some reason I haven't. It's called the SwitchBot. You heard of this?
I have a little robot finger.
It's a little robot finger. I think we should sell it better than this. So it's a robot. But I guess it is. So, if, you know, let's say you want to switch something on, but it doesn't have any ability to switch on. So, I mean, for example, I've got a light where you could switch the... You could put a smart plug on it, but if you turn the light on, you need to press a button in order to turn the light on, irrespective of whether you've... you know, put it on at the wall or not. And for that reason, you need something else. And something else in this case is the SwitchBot, which is just like, actually exactly like Sean says, it's just a little robot finger that pushes the button for you. I use that for my, well, I will be using actually, this is what I've got in mind for. We have outside lights in our house. And I'm thinking, well, what I could do is get a switch. The switch itself isn't smart. So what I'm thinking is put the SwitchBot on it. And then when I want the lights on, I can just ask Lady A to turn on the switch and then, you know, turn it back off, and the little robot finger will do the job.
Beautiful. And of course, fantastic if you're renting a property. So something like you can't put a Nest, you know, smart thermostat in. You can just put this on your boiler. If it's a boiler that just needs a switch to turn on, then this is great for stuff like that. Yeah, it's good.
Okay. Well, look, best of luck to you, Alex. Let us know how you got on. Andy.
Sticking with Lady A, friend of the show Kelly has emailed in, "Can you help me on something, please? Because I want to be able to use Zoom on Lady A. Let's say, for example, I wanted to have a live chat with you and I wanted to use Zoom. How do I go about doing it? Can I use an Amazon Dot or an Amazon Echo instead of an Echo Show, which I don't have, and I don't want one at the moment? Now, if I caught up a friend on Lady A using their landline and I felt that I'm speaking to them live, so it would be nice to be able to use Zoom instead. Can you help me, please, with that? Or if you know someone who might know the answer, all the best." That's from Kelly.
Well,
Robin, yeah.
you can only dial in or join Zoom calls that have dial-in options listed, and then just use the phone number for it. So that's the only way I know of on Echoes without a screen. And you could, you know, either say that manually, or you could set it up in contacts to dial that and call it, you know, Zoom meeting or something. Obviously, you can do Skype calls, though. So if the friend is happy to be Skyped rather than do a Zoom meeting, then that's much easier as well. Just add their Skype details into your contacts, and then you can just call that person. You can say Skype that person, or if you say, you know, call Mum, and there are several of them, she'll say, do you want to call mobile, landline, or Skype?
Okay. Now, when you're, just to be clear on this, when you're talking about making that Zoom call into a meeting, you're essentially just making a phone call. That's what you're just using it as a phone.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
But
yeah.
Haven't you, didn't it gain the ability recently to start a group Zoom call, no matter if it's not on a show? Or is that a show only feature? Because we did call each other. You initiated it.
If you can start it from a show.
Ah, right.
Yeah, because the Echo Show 10 supports Zoom.
But that's it. That's a shame.
Yeah, it only seems to work on an Echo Show. You know, if you Google that, that's all you'll find. And I agree. I mean, I think you're right, Kelly. I wouldn't necessarily want to have an Echo Show for that function either. I know you quite like your Echo Show, Robin. I find it's...
It's not ideal. Yeah, I mean, it certainly shouldn't be the only ones that you have in the house, because it doesn't give as good an experience. It's not a voice-first device. Although, you know, obviously, if you've got voice view turned on, then you can access that information. But it feels a bit more like you're using a computer then. And that's the beauty of the A-Lady, is that it's a voice first. You know, it just speaks everything nicely. So,
well, I fed this back to Amazon a while ago. We actually have Amazon. Dennis Stansbury is going to be joining us from Amazon next week on the show. So all Sean's comments will be played to him. And
I love you, Amazon.
So I don't think they'll fall out with you, Sean. You're too good a customer. But no, I think one of the things I said to them was it would be really great. I suggested two things. I suggested one, that they build in these of, if you like, the Echo audio mode into the Echo Show, so you could have it even under accessibility, where it'd be like, treat this as if it's an audio only device. You know, absolutely put the information up on screen, but make sure you're giving the audio feedback as well. I think that would be perfect, actually. And then you get the best of both worlds. And the second thing I suggested was snore mode, so that you'd know that your book would be able to sort of stop itself. And I've never heard anything back from them on those points. So there you go.
You can set
they turn up. We know where they got them from, Stephen. That was your idea.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying it here. I've said it here.
Yep.
They can have it for free. I don't care. But, you know, a bit of recognition, you know, that's all I'm asking for. Let's go on to another email from Kelly. Not from Kelly, I beg your pardon. Thank you to Kelly for your email. Let's go to another email, Andy.
Yes, this one is from Andy. Hi, guys. I'm totally blind. I don't have a TV at the moment. I've just heard your review of the Echo Show 10. Are earlier versions of the show that a sighted person can see clearly? My partner is fully sighted, but will the latest show sit easily on a bookshelf or on a dining room table? Also, is it possible to turn on audio description when setting up the device? Love the show. Keep up the good work. That's an email from Andy.
Well, short answer is on the audio description front. I think what you're probably referring to there might be the screen reader to set up the device. And the screen reader, yes, you can enable when you're setting it up, which is brilliant. My personal recommendation would be the Echo Show 8. The 10 is good. That's the one with the screen that kind of that can follow you around the room, although it doesn't have to. The 5, I would imagine, is quite small for anybody. That's maybe a sort of bedside, you know, alarm clock type device. But the Echo Show 8, definitely ideal for a kitchen, Robin.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, if he is talking about audio description, then that's per provider, because he was talking about, you know, I haven't got a TV at the moment. So, you know, if it's Amazon Prime or if it's YouTube or if it's Netflix, then you're going to have to switch that on for each of those. I don't think you can do it universally.
No.
But he might be talking about
voice feedback. But he says in the email, is it possible to turn on a description when setting up the device?
Yeah, yeah.
That would suggest more about the screen reader, but specifically on audio description, it is per app.
Yeah, and I think setting up, is it two fingers on the screen and wait for about 5 seconds or something, Sean? I can't remember. But when you're setting up the Echo Show, it's easy to...
It's the Android approach. Well, it is Android, isn't it?
It is, basically.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I would think about it in a different way. I would look at something like the Fire TV Stick. Mm-hmm. If you've got a sighted partner and you're... You know, you could plug it into... Oh, you don't have a TV.
No, but they could get one for £50 or something.
Or, or a computer monitor or...
Yeah,
that's right. Anything like that, which would give you a bigger screen, which may be, you know, preferable for your partner. And plus, you know, the Fire TV Stick does come with Lady A built in now as well. So, but the show is accessible. So you've got the screen reader voice view, which you can access right from the beginning through the setup. You can set it up yourself out of the box. But for the audio description and things, yeah you're just talking Netflix and Amazon Prime Video. You know, how much content is audio described? Netflix is okay, but Amazon Prime Video, there's not a huge amount, I would say, but it is getting better.
Yeah, I've never understood why a computer monitor, and I know this isn't going to be top of the range or anything, but you know, you get a 21, 27 or something inch for about £60. And I know what you're going to say, that's not, you know, any great shakes, but still it's, you know, it's higher res than your average TV, and it can be used for a TV for these kind of streaming services as well. So, yeah, I mean, that's obviously a lot bigger than the £250 you'd pay for the Show 10.
Mm. Okay, well, look, hope that helps. We are going to come back with more emails a bit later, but we are now going to talk all about the WeWalk Smart Cane. Have you ever wanted a smarter cane? Well, that's what the WeWalk offers. Let's find out what all that means. Ellie Marsh is here with more details.
Tech is always changing and improving, and there's always new gadgets on the market. And one such gadget is the WeWalk, created by blind and partially sighted people for blind and partially sighted people. It is a new smart cane. And I'm not going to try and explain what that means, because we have Jean here with us today from WeWalk to tell us all about it. Thank you so much for joining me, Jean.
No, it really is my pleasure, Ellie. Thank you very much for having me. So, how do I describe WeWalk? Well, it really is an exercise in simplicity. And WeWalk is a combination of a smart cane and a smartphone application. And it's really quite simple. So the smart cane itself, we've taken the white cane, which we know and love. You know, I'm a white cane user myself. It's a great tool. And all we've done is we've chopped off the rubber handle at the very top of the cane, and we've replaced it with the WeWalk smart handle. It's got all the tech bits inside, but that means that you can keep using your white cane as you would normally. So the experience is super familiar. But with WeWalk attached, you get upper body obstacle detection, you get a built-in touchpad, speaker, and microphone. And by bringing all of this together, we give you hands-free control of the WeWalk smartphone application. And the cool thing about the smartphone app is it's also standalone, so you can choose to use it with or without a WeWalk. But of course, when you pair them together, you get hands-free control, which is really, really cool. You know, being able to navigate and get turn-by-turn directions without even having to take your phone out of your pocket. It's super useful to help you concentrate on the road ahead of you. But with our smartphone app, we truly believe that we have built the most comprehensive navigation application available for our visually impaired community. Again, it's an app which I love and use on a day-to-day basis. It's an app which my visually impaired colleagues use on a day-to-day basis. And it's got low vision mapping. So even if you have residual sight, you can use that with different color filters and text sizes. We've got public transport. So WeWalk will tell you about what bus or train is upcoming. It'll get you on the right bus or train. It'll even get you off at the right stop and basically take you through every step of the journey through one autonomous interface. And we have new features always coming up. So one thing that we love talking about at WeWalk is we're not just a static platform. Because we're a mobile app, we always have updates coming in. We've got the experience improving, and then we've got some pretty big R&D projects coming down the pipeline as well. So WeWalk today is very different than WeWalk was 6 months ago, and it's probably going to be very different a year in the future as well.
Lots of information there, and it's great to hear that you don't have to relearn how to use this. It's the same as any normal white cane, so you don't have to redo a course or anything like that to learn how to use it. It's just the tech that's built into it. So what are some of the features? You've explained traveling and getting onto buses and things like that. What are some of the other features that help people to navigate while they're walking around with the WeWalk?
Of course, and I just want to point out and bring attention to one of the points that you made there, Ellie, which is you keep the standard cane usage the same. And that's super key for us. Like, or your orientation and mobility is always your best asset as a visually impaired person. And we can only just provide tools to further augment that, to give you better access to your surroundings and to the orientation and mobility that you already possess. And we do that with a bunch of features. So the obstacle detection that you get with the WeWalk Smart Cane, that's super useful. Again, it's super simple. It's an ultrasonic sensor which sends out ultrasonic signals. You can control the range of obstacle detection, and it just sends you back vibrations through WeWalk's handle. Again, really basic stuff, but extremely helpful stuff to give you that extra safety for things like low-hanging tree branches. Otherwise, the WeWalk app itself is a combination of a bunch of different mobility services. So we've got the navigation. That's simple as that. You type in your postcode, whatever, a business name, a street address, and WeWalk will take you there. We've got text directions, total voiceover compliance, low vision mapping as well. We've got the multimodal transport, so WeWalk can navigate to stops. You can see whatever buses or trains are coming to that stop. We have my places feature, so you can even save a bunch of places. So you can almost like set little breadcrumbs for places that you love or places that you often visit. And we've even got a new feature coming out supported by Microsoft called mobility tracking. So you can use your WeWalk device and your smartphone sensors to get some metrics on how you're moving. So your walking speed, your cane swipes per step, you know, stuff that you couldn't really get before without equipping a cane with a bunch of sensors. And when you connect WeWalk, that's when the experience becomes even better, because now instead of having to use your touchscreen and Bluetooth headset, which you still can, by the way, you can still use a Bluetooth headset with WeWalk, but when you've got your smartphone in your hand, when you connect WeWalk, you can put that smartphone away and use WeWalk's built-in touchpad and voice to get your navigation, see what's around you, you know, check out what restaurants and businesses are around you. It's really very cool.
It is very cool. And you've certainly been getting a lot of attention. In 2019, you were listed in Time Magazine's Best 100 Inventions, and the congratulations is in order more recently because you were selected as the Startup of the Year by Amazon. How does that feel?
Absolutely incredible. I mean, when WeWalk first started as a small, you know, pet project at the YGA as a social impact initiative, I don't think anyone would have imagined that we would have sort of achieved such global attention so quickly. But again, this is all down to our visually impaired community and the people that supported us. So the RNIB being, you know, such a great partner to us, we're even an ongoing research partner for a project that's, you know, UKRI funded. So there's so much work we're doing with organizations such as yourselves and our community that have brought us to where we are today. And we are extraordinarily grateful for that. I honestly cannot thank everyone, be it our individual users who believed in us in the early days, to our big tech supporters like Microsoft, who stepped in there and went, you know what? Let's do some cool tech stuff for visually impaired people. So it's been a bunch of people getting behind us and supporting the mission. And now we're just, you know, we're moving along, we're growing, we're getting more WeWalks out there. We've made our app standalone as well, so users can download it right now and try it out. So we're doing our best to give back what the community has given us through these last few years.
So what do you think is the number one best feature about the WeWalk?
Ooh, you see, this is going to be a questionable one because every user will have a different set of features. For me, because I have residual sight, I have something called Leber's congenital amaurosis. It's similar to RP. I love low vision mapping. And to the best of my knowledge, we're the only app that actually does that low vision mapping. So I always fire up my WeWalk wherever I'm navigating. I know others love our obstacle detection because they're sort of they'd like that full body coverage. Whereas in daytime, I'm more of a symbol cane user. So again, it completely varies based on use case. But I can almost guarantee you, no matter what level of sight you have, you will probably find the feature of WeWalk that you'll really like.
What's next for WeWalk then?
That's a big question. I've rambled on for so many minutes. I'm gonna ramble on for so many more. I'd say it's our R&D collaborations. So again, as I mentioned previously, WeWalk isn't a static platform for us. It's not like we just built a hardware device and called it a day. It's super important for us to collaborate with other organizations to bring in new features to WeWalk that we might have never imagined previously. One of them is that mobility tracking feature. So that feature was powered by Microsoft. We're using their services to power it. It's not easy just sort of using sensor data to understand what a cane swipe is. It takes months and months of development and literature and research. And it's really cool. So that's one of our biggest features. The next one is our enhanced navigation system, which is being supported by Imperial College and the RNIB. So we're looking at expanding WeWalk's navigation capacities indoors. And of course, we keep adding small features here and there. So multimodal navigation is one which recently came out. We're looking towards things like voice assistants, breadcrumbing. In the next 6 months, the WeWalk app should have even more features.
Brilliant. Well, keep in touch and best of luck for the future. And thank you so much for joining me, John, and taking the time to talk to us today.
No, thank you very much for hosting me, Ellie. It really is a pleasure to be here. And I just can't wait to hear more visually impaired people's thoughts on WeWalk and what we're doing. And if anyone has any feedback or would like to get to know more, then you can always check us out on WeWalk.io.
Thanks, Ellie. And of course, all the details about WeWalk, you can find out online, WeWalk.io. Tell us your thoughts on the WeWalk Smart Cane. Robin, would you trade in your guide dog for a smart cane?
I want all the brilliant controls that the WeWalk has on its handle, on the kind of handle bit that I hold when I'm using the dog. I want play pause controls. I want sat nav.
Well, you could just get a remote control and just stick it on the harness, couldn't you? Just stick an Apple remote.
Oh. That can be their next product.
Oh, can you imagine that? The Apple guide dog harness? iDog. That's the next
one.
I want one.
That's a good idea. I think I actually agree. If you could get something like controls just on the standard cane, the technology, the sonar technology and things like that is great. But if you could just get something that would control your phone, I would definitely snap that up.
Okay, time for this, guys.
News from the internet.
And a pretty serious one to start with on the show this week. I bring it up because it's one of these topics I'd normally maybe steer away from a little bit, but you know, I think on this occasion so many people have been talking about it. I will be honest, I've been surprised at some of the online reaction to this. You would generally think the reaction would be positive. The story is Apple are going to be scanning iPhones for child abuse images, and let me give you some details about this. Apple have announced details of a system to find child sexual abuse material, as is known, CSAM, on US customers' devices. So before an image is stored into iCloud Photos, which is when you take a picture, your phone will upload it to back up to iCloud, the technology will then sort of grab it before then, search for matches of already known child abuse sex material. Sexual abuse material, I should say. Apple have said that if a match is found, a human reviewer would then assess and report the user to law enforcement. Now, of course, as a result of that, people have raised privacy concerns that the technology could therefore be expanded to scan phones for prohibited content or even political speech. And experts are worrying that the technology could be used by authoritarian governments to spy on its citizens. So, obviously, the conversation starts in one place, and once the internet gets hold of it, it goes off and turns into something else. Robin, I know you've looked at this story. First thoughts on hearing this news?
Well, you could take any technology-related story and talk about the potential for abuse, you know, the potential for misuse of that technology. You absolutely could. You know, AI can be used for massive benefit or for, you know, surveillance, scanning people's speech and images, et cetera, looking at their online presence as a whole and building a dossier about them that, you know, bad actors could use against them, et cetera. So this is another one of these stories. I think the potential for the benefit of cracking down and ideally, you know, eradicating if Google and other platforms came on board as well, the horrendous, you know, practice of sharing sexual child sex abuse images. I think that the upside here should definitely outweigh the theoretical concerns. I mean, having a backdoor, you know, there's often been discussions around, is there a backdoor that the NSA, you know, the National Security Agency in America has to iPhones and Pixel phones, etc., so that they can potentially monitor for terrorist activity. You know, if that backdoor exists, then maybe third-party governments that aren't quite so conscientious but that have enough money might be able to use that backdoor, you know, pay people to kind of find that backdoor and crack it open, etc. So one thing we should make clear here, though, is that it's not looking at the images. It's looking at, it's hashing the image on your device, i.e. it's processing the image down into a string, into a code, a unique number of characters and comparing that with other codes on a known database. So if that code matches, then that image is looked at by a human. So if it doesn't match at all, then no one's going to look at the images on your phone. If there is a match, then AI or the hashing algorithm being what it is, it may or may not be one of those images. But if it's very close, then I'm hoping it's actually going to pick up new images that people have taken on their phones that are very similar to known images as well. I'm all for this. I think this is a good thing.
Yeah, and I think you'd find it very hard to find someone who was against the practice of, you know, finding and trying to trace any sexual abuse towards children. I think that we all, of course, we stand up for that. The problem with this argument, I guess, is that it's very difficult to raise other concerns, because immediately you can be tarred with, well, hang on a minute, what have you got to hide? Why are you against this? That's a problem, Sean, isn't it? That's a problem in this argument. Where do you stand in all this?
Oh, no, I totally agree with Robin. The slippery slope argument is not an argument for me. No matter what the topic actually is, the slippery slope argument is no argument at all. This is talking about a specific problem that they're addressing, and I can't think of a single reason against it. And actually, all the headlines that I've read about this, much like I've said about a lot of security outcries in the past, your smart speaker is listening to you, this and that. When you actually look at the details, it's utter nonsense. It's always someone's accidentally triggered a call on their smart speaker or whatever it may be. It's not ever as dark as they make it seem. And when it comes to this technology, it is just for images that are going up to iCloud. It isn't just for a single image. There's a threshold that needs to be met. So a series of images needs to be identified before anyone is brought in on this. I can't think of a single reason why this shouldn't be used. For people I've seen headlines out there that Apple are spying on your photos. That is not true. They're not looking at every single photo and using something like image recognition to identify what's in there. As Robin said, this is simply encryption and using what they call hashing. It's an ID, a lot like Shazam works for music. Mm. It's not actual music that it keeps in its database. It's just a series of numbers. It's clever stuff. I don't know how it works, but there is a list of known images out there that have been identified, and that list of numbers is going to be in every iPhone, and they're going to check against that. Fantastic. I think it should go further, to be honest.
Well, Matthew Green, who's a security researcher at Johns Hopkins University, has been very vocal about this online. He would disagree with you, I think it's fair to say, on this. He says, regardless of what Apple's long-term plans are, they've sent a very clear signal in their, in his words, very influential opinion. It is safe to build systems that scan users' phones for prohibited content. He says whether they turn out to be right or wrong on that point hardly matters. This will break the dam. Governments will demand it from everyone.
Nonsense.
Andy, what do you think?
Nonsense from John.
Nonsense.
Yeah, no, look, from about a couple of hours ago, I was of the same mindset. And Sean and I had a discussion about this before we came on. And now I'm seeing things more from his point of view, because I'm like the average consumer. I would say, I don't want anyone scanning my phone. I don't want you scanning my photographs. I don't want you to do this or that. And it's not that I'm, defending the indefensible and saying whatever you have on your phone is your own right. Because like this example, there are some instances where you shouldn't have images on your phone. And yes, then that comes into the issue of, legal or illegal side of things. And we had that discussion, and Sean pointed out the wrongs and rights, and I will hold my hands up and say that I didn't read this story in depth enough, and I just created an opinion from it, and I was like, I don't want anyone scanning my phone. But the more I thought about it, like Sean and Robin have said, there is already an element of scanning going on my phone, the image recognition and stuff like that. I can search on Google Photos, and I can search cat, and everything that I've saved in my photo library that the image recognition is picking up a cat is already happening. So the thing that I was getting a bit antsy about and saying, I'm concerned that I don't want people to think that, you know, I'm hiding something or anything, but I don't want people scanning my phone. That's already happening. But from what Robin and what Sean have said so far, my worries have been curtailed, shall we say.
Wow. Don't listen to us.
No. Why am I? Yeah. This is the first time, I would say.
No, you're absolutely right, though, because the stigma of being accused of something like that
is
terrible, because you can't think of anything worse of being accused of, right? And, you know, of course...
Well, it would end your career. It would end your...
Exactly. Yeah.
Potentially end your social life, everything else. You know, it all goes with it.
Is there a chance that someone could, you know, maliciously send you something like that, unsolicited, and then suddenly, you know, you're flagged up somewhere? I don't know. And look, the way they're doing this right now, that isn't going to happen, because there is a threshold you need to hit. As I said, I think actually it should go further than that.
And also, it would stop people being able to send it to you, because they wouldn't be able to have it on their phone. So, yeah, once it's kind of in place.
Sorry, Robin, there's services such as Facebook already that do this. They do it server side. The big thing about this is that it's being done on your device, in your hand. This is being checked. Facebook do this, and last year they flagged something like 26 million instances of CSAM. Now, that number is so big that it almost becomes, how does anyone deal with that number of things? And is that is there any false positives in there? This is just taking it off into someone else's, into your own device. And it comes down to how much you trust a company like Apple. And let's be fair, you know, Apple have been very, when it comes to privacy, they've been pretty much top notch. And I don't know how much you can ever trust a company, but you got to start somewhere, and I don't see a problem with this. I don't, at least let's try it and see if it helps.
There's no
if
doubt.
You were to, no, if go you were for to content. Accidentally leave your iCloud login on a public machine, say you were using an internet cafe, or you'd gone into the Apple store and you'd logged in to do something, what if you'd accidentally left in and then something malicious happens after you've left? Someone comes on and does. So how does Apple then prove that that's...
Well, it is the thing about the iCloud account, and I think it is one of the more secure setups, is that, you know, if you are foolish enough to leave it in that state, then I think that's partly on you. You need to be very clear on that, I think. And also the way that the two-factor authentication works, you would be able to remotely sign out of any device that you had been in. That's if it would even allow you to. I mean, once you close the browser, I imagine that's probably it. You know, you've kind of logged out, and you would have to log back in with a password and then go through the two-factor authentication again. You know, it always feels like Fort Knox when you're trying to get into these things, but you know, but when you think about it, it's actually really important. It's a very difficult issue. I started off with this story thinking, how can anybody argue this? This is only going to be a good thing. This can only be a good thing. Why would you be against this? But most of the people I'm hearing from are not arguing about this. They're arguing about what happens next. It's not about the now. It's about what happens with this. How far does it go? Now, Sean, you're absolutely right. Other companies are already doing this. We also don't know where it could go in the future with voice, things we say, how much is captured. Let's think about, you know, captioning, for example, right? A very useful accessibility tool that helps people who are deaf or hard of hearing use YouTube or watch TV or whatever it might be, right? Captioning is very important. If every word you say is being captured for AI purposes, everything you're saying is essentially being transcribed. And that could be a private conversation via encrypted message apps like WhatsApp or even through iMessage. Or it could be, you know, a precursor to a meeting. You know, you say, what did Jean look like this week? You know, terrible, that dress she wore, or whatever it is, you know. Someone says something in a meeting. And then suddenly they're hauled up on it because it's been captured and it's been pulled up and used against. I think these are the real concerns people have. It doesn't necessarily have to be governments overthrowing its citizens. It can sometimes be very small incremental changes. We saw it and we feared it during the pandemic, I think. A lot of us feared that governments would use the power and not give it back at the end.
A good point.
I think people immediately are jumping to these concerns around governments that want to take over their people, you know.
The slippery slope, yeah, but you deal with those topics when they arise. When they say, right, we want to now scan for any, you know, political memes you've got on your phone, then we stand up and we say, no, that's not right. But when it's something like this, absolutely. It's a bit like when the, you know, after 9/11 with the terrorist laws that were brought in. They are very invasive, but most of us stood up and said, yes, okay, we're okay. Now, if that goes too far or we feel that they're no longer relevant, then we stand up and we say we no longer want this.
Well, I would encourage anybody who's of that mindset and considering, and it's hard to believe this, that this is the 20th anniversary this year of 9/11. I cannot believe it's been 20 years. But there's a movie that's on Amazon Prime at the moment. It's a true story based on the story of one prisoner at Guantanamo Bay. The film's called The Mauritanian. Brilliant lawyer who described as well, you know, go check it out. It's worth watching. If that topic interests you at all, you probably want to watch that movie. Look, I want to go off this topic because we've got other stuff to get to, and I want to just quickly mention about Google. Google's latest Pixel phones are going to be powered by its own processor called Tensor. Now, there's still a lot to learn about all of this and what it actually means, but, you know, Google have managed to keep this fairly quiet for now and certainly kept the power of this chip a secret. We're going to be seeing it in a new device, the Pixel 6, although it hasn't been announced. Its existence has been confirmed. Apparently, onboard processing, which is really where these processors are going to work for us, you know, the onboard processing is going to get even better. You know, instead of having to, you know, like, it's going to happen with iOS 15 as well. You know, the device will process Siri rather than you ask a question to Siri, she goes off to the cloud, she asks the cloud says, don't have a clue, and it comes back and says, don't have a clue, because that's how Siri works. You know, the Pixel will do all this on board, as will the iPhone now, which is great, but you obviously need the power behind it, and this new Tensor processor will allow that to be the case. So that's rather interesting. And another story quickly to mention, and that is the news of Amazon's Fire TV Cube now supporting Zoom calls. And one of the reasons that the Fire TV Cube specifically gets this feature is because, and I didn't know this, but you can actually plug in a webcam to the Amazon Fire TV Cube. You can do that directly into the device via the micro USB port, which you can get an adapter for, and then you can plug in a webcam to it, and you could do Zoom calls on your TV. So that might be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about our earlier caller, but then, of course, you don't have a TV. Problem
does
there.
Does a cube work without a TV plugged in? I'm not convinced it does. And if it does work without a TV, does it act just like a normal Echo then, not a one with a display?
Mm-hmm. I don't have an EVG and stuff, but yeah.
Well, yeah, the cube's an interesting little device. And I will say, I think it's much more useful in the States. If Tim was here, he would tell us about it. But I think it's far more useful in the States than it is here. It's getting better. If anyone's got one, do tell us about it. Tell us how you use it, because I know when I tried it a while back, I got fed up with it because it didn't work well with Sky. It didn't really work with the TV. I couldn't control anything that I was hoping that I would be able to do with it. So if that's changed, you know, let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Now, when you are looking to buy new tech, what we tend to do, I don't know about you guys, I tend to watch a lot of unboxing videos online. That's all the rage at the moment. And I'm a big fan of them, and I know that a lot of our listeners are. I know you guys are. But there's a new one out there. Well, I say new. The guy's actually been around for a little while. Ricky West is a YouTuber. He works also here at RNIB, but in his spare time, he has his own YouTube channel. He's about to hit 30,000 subscribers, so he's doing really well. And he is in conversation this week with Polina Kohorev to tell us all about his channel called Ricky's Tech Talk.
So Ricky's Tech Talk, how did this whole idea start? What inspired you?
I was like everyone else, really. I was very intrigued at seeing what the latest products were and what you got in the box. So I used to always watch unboxing videos, and I came across some people doing it in America, a gentleman called David that I used to always watch all the time. And I thought, oh, I would like to have a go at that. And with YouTube, you have to think about your own niche and what's different to you. And I thought it'd be good to look at an accessible point of view as well, being visually impaired. And I'm actually classed as registered blind. So I got a phone from a company, and I thought, oh, I can do this. And that's where it started. And that was back in 2012. So ever since then, it's grown and it's been so much fun. And I've got to see so many different products, and I managed to travel the world as well, which has been really exciting.
Does it surprise your viewers that you are registered blind?
Yes, I do get some comments saying, oh, how do you manage to see to do that? Or how do you manage to create a video? And what I do is I explain being visually impaired is it may take me a little bit longer to create a video because I'll film something and then I'll bring it on a larger screen and take a look at it and see if it looks okay. Or if my partner's around, she'll take a look at it and just take my time to tape out an area and make a center point. And I know if I move beyond that area, it's going to be out of the camera shot. Being registered blind, I do have some sight out of my right eye, which is tunnel vision. So I can see enough to set this outline. But my viewers are shocked sometimes with some of the bits that I show, and they always ask me to be on the front of camera, and that very rarely happens because, one, I'm a little shy, and two, I'm just a little worried about being focused on the camera sometimes.
Yeah, because I did notice most of your videos are those shots of the unboxing or the product.
Yes, and the thing is, everyone that I speak to a lot of YouTubers here in the UK and in abroad when we meet up at press events, and everyone says to me, it's so important to be in front of the camera because then someone relates to that voice or to those hands or to whatever's in the shot. I think moving forward and looking at the future, I think that's something I need to try and even maybe just share an experience of being visually impaired and celebrating certain successes and just explaining to my audience, this is maybe why I'm not in front of the camera all the time.
Because it doesn't really matter that much, does it? It's meant to be all about the products, not necessarily what you had for breakfast that day.
Yes, there's loads of people that out there that do blogs and what they do for the day in their daily life. But for me, it's about sharing the products because not everyone can afford certain products and not everyone wants to spend a lot of money. So they want to know what they're getting for their money. Everyone loves that experience of unboxing something. I think it's very strange to have videos that have over 250,000, 300,000 views of me just taking something out of the box. But you read through the comments and people think, oh, it's so nice to see this, or it's excitement as well. A lot of people may be getting it for their birthday or for a certain holiday period. And I think that's why people come and watch the videos.
It's also, I think, something we do when we are about to get a new product and when we're not sure, so we're going to research it. And when you come in and you might discuss the accessibility aspect of it, it's really helpful to make a decision of what is suitable for you and what you should spend your money on.
Definitely, I completely agree. With spending money on an accessible product that's going to help you and give you the ability to use that product like everyone else is very important to me because I think we should all use the products in the way they're supposed to be used. So it's important companies offer services and the options to change and adjust it. So I do like to highlight that. And that begins with the setup process as well, because when you get a new product, sometimes you need to go through quite a lengthy setup process. But now companies are adding accessible options and different settings that people can change right at the beginning. So you don't need to ask anyone for help. You can be independent if you want to, or you could come to RNIB and get some help as well.
Yeah, because we have the Technology for Life team. So the easiest way to get in touch with them is usually through the helpline. So the phone number, I'll give that out at the end. But have you found during, I guess, since we've had quite a few lockdowns and people have been using technology more, are you getting more questions about accessibility from people that maybe haven't relied on it as much until just recently?
I've had people come to me and say, which is the better option? Is it A or B, or is it Samsung, or is it iPhone, or is Alexa really helpful? A lot of people have asked questions about Alexa recently because it's been helping with different books, it's helped with music, it's also then helped with timers and alarms. And then people want to stay connected, so they've asked, what device helps making calls or even using Zoom or Teams, FaceTime. You've got Google Meets. You've got loads of different platforms, and people are asking the question of, do the accessible settings work with these applications? And in the majority of time, it is yes. And that we can see through RNIB, the work I've done, and also outside, the devices have made these accessible services to use so people can stay connected, because we have felt all isolated, and technology we have lent on so much in this lockdown period.
Before we let you go, what is the best way to keep in touch with your channel?
So the best way to find me is via Ricky's Tech Talk. So if you just search that into Google, and you'll see a blue and white background, and you can then come and subscribe to the channel and celebrate with me. Actually, we're coming very close now to 30,000 subscribers, which is unbelievable. And I'm just so proud that it started with a simple unboxing of a device. And it's amazing the community we've built up.
So massive congratulations. Can't wait till you reach that milestone. And as promised, if you do have any technology questions as well, you can obviously send them to Ricky at Ricky's Tech Talk, or you can reach out to the RNIB Technology for Life team. So the best way is through either the RNIB helpline on 0303-123-9999. And you can also email them. It's tfl@rnib.org.uk. Ricky, it has been lovely catching up with you, and I hope we can speak again on RNIB Connect Radio.
Yes, I look forward to it. It'd be lovely to speak to you again, and thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you to Ricky West, talking there to Polina Kohorev. You can hear the full conversation on our podcasts. Search for them wherever you get your podcasts by searching RNIB. And yes, Ricky, of course, they're getting almost 30,000 subscribers. That's about as many as you've got on Dot to Dot, Robin Christofferson, isn't it?
Oh, there or thereabouts.
There you go. There you go. See, I'd get you a nice little plug in there at the end. That's so nice,
thanks.
Isn't it? That's almost it from us this week. Thank you so much for your time, as always. Keep your emails coming, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. I'm fairly sure there's a few topics of this week's show that will get you talking. So, you know, please do get in touch and share your thoughts. We do love getting your feedback. We will be in conversation next week with Amazon, talking to Dennis Stansbury from Amazon, all about RNIB's new talking book skill. We'll have more of your emails and lots more besides. And that is it for us. Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Emails Andy, of course, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
And sitting in for a poorly Tim Schwartz, it's Sean Priest. Thank you, Sean. Thanks for coming along.
Thank you. Get well soon, Tim.
And we'll catch you again next time for another Tech Talk.